Another excellent analogy is the body, because you can apply all four levels. You can apply personal, the intrapersonal, if you see what I mean, the managerial, the mind, the direction of it, and the organizational, how everything is organized together. It's a very good metaphor, it really is. It's a natural metaphor. People can relate to it. It's not artificial. It's one of its strengths. It's very natural. Now, what are the key elements that you need at these four levels? At the personal level, trustworthiness. Let me define trustworthiness for a moment. Someone's trustworthy if you can depend upon them. Someone's trustworthy if they have the character and the competency. If they lack the competency, you wouldn't want this honest doctor to do the surgery. If they have the competency, but there isn't basic integrity there, you don't know if you would want him to do the surgery or whether the surgery should be done at all. So I suggest that trustworthiness is a function basically of two things, character and competence. And competence is defined by the demands and realities of the situation that you're trying to serve. Character comes out of personal development. Competence comes out of professional development. Both must continuously be worked upon. Many people may justify failures in competence in the name of their character. Others may justify failures in character in the name of their competence. Both are absolutely necessary. It's what a person is and what a person can do. And if that is equal to the demands of the situation, that creates trustworthiness. Now, what's the key concept in the relationship with others? If you were to put it into one word, think, what would it be? Trust, wouldn't it? I mean, trust says so much. Trust tells volumes. That is the key concept. You know you can't talk yourself out of problems you behave yourself into. So you can see why trustworthiness always precedes trust. Many organizations have perhaps attempted to talk themselves out of problems they've got themselves into through the press, see, in the courts. But maybe the paradigm hasn't shifted to where they're really going to experience the fruits of a change of heart, a change of mind, see. So trust is the fruit of trustworthiness. So you can see why the personal is the building block, the self. And this trust is the cement. Now, I want to ask you this question. Assuming you've got high trust, how do you supervise people? There's high trust in your team. How do you manage them?
Give them the freedom to fail and empower them to go up and do their own thing.
Give them the freedom to fail, empower them. But what if they're going to do some dumb things? Can you afford? You're dealing with some very risky things and large sums of money and other people's investment.
Well, if that trust level is there, and that, you know, that should be minimized.
Trust in what?
In the relationship between you and
okay.
The people that you're dealing with.
And what are you trusting?
Their competency,
as well as their integrity. Mm-hmm. Now, if they didn't have the competency to deal with this huge decision, you wouldn't give them trust in that area. Even though they had the character to do it. Or if they had the competency but lacked the character, you wouldn't give them the trust. But if you did have trust, how would you supervise them? Stewardship delegation is different than a gopher delegation. In other words, you set up a full sense of what is expected and what the guidelines are to work within, a full sense of it, until it is bought into win-win performance agreements. This would be called empowerment. See, empowerment follows on high trust. Now, what would follow on low trust? Control. What if you had a new employee, for instance, who had tremendous character, great desire, but didn't have the basic competency? What would you do?
You'd probably follow them closely, do step by step.
That's right. See, you would essentially be prescribing practices to that person and following through and doing some on-the-job training. Does that violate the principle?
No.
Not at all, because that's part of developing the competency. It's called training and development. But if you only gave practices and didn't explain the underlying principles, then you really wouldn't be developing that person for the long haul. You wouldn't be mentoring that person, see, to build internal competency and independence inside that person. That's why so much depends on the definition of what trustworthy is. If trustworthiness involves competency and people are not competent, you don't all of a sudden try to empower them with some big stewardship delegation. People that have tried to do that and have been burned have often called this whole thing guilty by association with that burning experience. Furthermore, there may be some things that history has taught you don't work. You know full well they don't work, so what would you do? Provide that as part of the training. These are called the no-nos. And you'll find that they come in the form of practices. So you can begin to see that this empowerment concept is teaching principles and deciding what the no-nos are, the bad practices that history has taught you over and over again won't work. It's one of the reasons many MBO programs got into trouble. They didn't describe the no-nos. MBO stands for Management by Objectives, and people felt like, now I'm now free to do whatever I need to do to accomplish that objective. But they didn't have the competency. So they did some dumb things, or perhaps they had the competency, everyone felt they did, but they still did something that was way out of line and which history has demonstrated again and again, and everyone agrees will fail. So you identify that, and that's part of the performance agreement, or you could call it the mission statement of each person in a responsibility or a job, see, is to identify the no-nos, what things not to do. If you know that there's going to be some wild animals out there and you don't tell him that, if you're not a resource to that person, that's a key element in the development of that win-win performance. This is a very important thing we're talking about, because too many people get into the dichotomy, either or. I'm either in control or I'm out of control. See, when you build this mission statement called a win-win performance agreement for a person in a responsibility, then if it's truly win-win, which means you're dealing with all four needs of what? That person and of the organization and all the other stakeholders that are being served by that organization. If you build that into there, you've identified yourself as a resource, you've identified the guidelines, including no-nos, things not to do. I have some friends that have built their entire professional work on what's called failure avoidance, rather than success enhancement. And it's very profound, it's very effective, and it's a new paradigm. Almost all of the traditional approaches focus on success enhancement. Failure avoidance means you get common understanding of the ways that things can fail. Once you have that understanding, then you build into the performance agreement a clear description of those, their no-nos, see? Now what happens? That's the true stewardship delegation, because it leaves every other avenue free, which taps into what need? The psychological need. And the psychological need really is a composite for just scores of needs inside people. The need to know and to belong and to receive some recognition and to have my ideas really considered and to synergize. There are just so many psychological needs. In fact, from my experience, the one area that is neglected the most in mission statements is the psychological area. The very fact they go into a mission statement, in my opinion, they already have a sense of the spiritual. That is, what is our purpose? What is our vision? They also usually have a sense, the very fact they would undertake the process, unless it's just purely mechanical and PR cosmetics. They also have a sense that you want to have some integrity around it. The one that's neglected the most is the psychological. I read them over and over again. Almost all of them talk about how people are treated, you know, the social. They talk usually about the economic side, the principle of fairness. They often talk about many stakeholders. And they often talk about the spiritual. They don't talk enough about the unique psychological needs which that organization, that reality, can activate in other people's lives, because all organizations and realities cannot tap into all those needs. That's why an economic enterprise itself cannot satisfy the full needs of people. There are too many other capacities in people which an economic organization and a social organization or a purely spiritual organization cannot meet. A church can't do the work, see, of a business, nor the business of a church. A therapist doesn't do the work of a business, and the business does not do the work of the therapist. I have to back up a little on that. If it's really the creation of this total approach, I'm convinced that it does do enormous therapeutic work on individuals, but in a more general and generic sense. I'm convinced that most stress is a product of boredom, duplicity, imbalance, crisis atmosphere. And that if you work at these four levels, you can deal with the roots of stress. But let's keep going. We've gone to the third level, the concept of empowerment. I suggest that there are five basic elements to any win-win performance agreement, and that these are irreducible. You cannot eliminate one of them. And their power lies in the synergy between them. First, a clear sense of desired results. See, because you're not telling them methods, so they have to get a clear vision. What is it we're about? So you take, in a sense, the overall mission statement, and when it gets finally down to this person's job, how does this job serve that strategic path which comes out of the mission statement to serve customers and so forth? That's first. Second, guidelines. What are the principles? What are the values? What are the no-nos? Third, resources. You are a resource, see? You see something wrong, you identify it. Do you want me to give that information to you, see? Any information that comes about performance will go directly to you, not through me. If it goes through you, what kind of paradigm are you in?
Control.
Back into control. You're into a thing and into efficiency, and you may do it in a very kind of soft and kind way. Instead, the information goes directly to the person. Fourth, accountability. So that person knows that I give an accounting on this stewardship, this responsibility. They know when, and they know the criteria. And what are the criteria?
Desired results.
And the guidelines, see? And if you have a good description of desired results, both in terms of all stakeholders, see, and in terms of short and long term, and you have good information that comes directly to the person, that person brings to the accountability visit, then who governs that person?
Themselves.
Governs themselves. Manages themselves. You manage things, you lead people. In other words, set up win-win performance agreements. Fifth, what are the consequences? First, what are the natural consequences? What happens when you do this or don't do this? Second, what are the logical consequences that flow upon that? If this happens, these good things happen. Should you not share in that? That may be tying into compensation. Financial, psychic compensation, additional opportunity, expanded stewardship, see? Desired results, guidelines, you know, including no-nos, resources, accountability, and consequences. A win-win performance agreement is a mutual understanding and commitment regarding expectations, and requires a great deal of trust and trustworthiness, and it takes time. You can't get too pushy and too impatient in developing these mission statements or these performance agreements. People are not things. You can move things about rapidly. You can even develop programs like a strategy over a weekend, or you can rearrange your furniture in an hour. You could clean your garage maybe in a day. But with people, it's a different world. People are agents unto themselves. They have the power to choose their response to any given set of circumstances.
They have their own values. They have their own needs, their own concerns, their own perceptions, how they see their world. So to hammer out these win-win performance agreements takes time and tremendous patience. As one put it, you can't keep pulling up the flowers to see how the roots are coming. Let me just give one example. We were asked by a large banking organization to strengthen their training program in producing assistant branch managers. The branch manager work was basically on-the-job training of assistant branch managers, and since they were growing so rapidly, they had to keep producing these assistant branch managers. Their past program was this. They would take college graduates and put them into a 6-month program of 2 weeks in 12 different functional areas, such as accounting, operations, industrial loans, real estate loans, and so forth. After 6 months, they would be essentially assigned to be an assistant branch manager in hope in the long run that they could become a branch manager. Well, notice what we did. We took a win-win performance agreement and set it up. We identified desired results, guidelines, resources, the criteria of the accountability stage, and the consequence. One of the consequences was as soon as they would meet the criteria, they could become assistant branch managers. But notice what we took out? Methods. You cannot hold people responsible for results if you supervise their methods. The moment you supervise someone's methods, you become responsible for results. I did what you wanted me to do. It didn't work, did it? What do you want me to do now, boss? So you're transferring more and more responsibility to the other person. You're empowering them. So we asked the top executives, what should these people be able to do when they become assistant branch managers? Their answers are very abstract and nebulous. We pressed them and pressed them until finally they came up with specific criteria in several different areas. Then what do you think we did? We just took those criteria, gave them to the candidates, and said, as soon as you meet these criteria, you're assistant branch managers. They met them in 3.5 weeks. 6-month program cut to 3.5 weeks. This really disturbed the top executives, and they wouldn't go along with making them assistant branch managers because they said they lack seasoning. They lack experience. So we said, fair enough, let's come up with some tougher criteria that would demonstrate the kind of judgment they should be able to exercise as an assistant branch manager that would satisfy you. And they came up with some tough ones and agreed to sit in on the panels themselves in the accountability sessions. What did we do? We gave it to the people and said, you're empowered. Go to it. We were afraid they may not make you assistant branch managers. We indicated that up front, but they guarantee it this time. Gave them the additional criteria. 1.5 weeks, they were finished. And almost to a person, the managers admitted they were better prepared than those that had gone through the 6-month training program. What happened? You've empowered people. You've unleashed their talent, their energy, their capacity, focused upon a desired result within the guidelines. It became so exciting to the top executives, they began to think this way toward other facets of their work and organization. If people could begin to sense the big bucks that could be saved through this empowerment approach, because the effect is enormous on the organization. The larger third domain is, the less you need a first domain, control, rules, regulations, because people are voluntarily using their freedom to participate in honoring the mores and the norms formed in that domain. This whole area of win-win performance agreements is an absolutely fascinating area. It represents a whole philosophy, but again, it is founded upon trust and trustworthiness. There is no quick fix. The law of the farm governs. Now let me say a few words with regard to alignment, the principle of alignment. That basically means that in addition to getting everybody's mission statements and job statements in alignment with each other, you want to make sure that the style of the people and the structure you've set up and the systems are totally in alignment. What about your training and development system? Do you really espouse growing people? Well, then it's considered an investment. Or is it? Is it an expense? If you say that you value interdependence, do you reward independence? If you say you value cooperation, do you set up systems of competition? If you say you value innovation, do you reward people for lockstep conformity? If you say you value capitalism, do you practice feudalism? If you say you value democracy, do you practice autocracy, no involvement? If you say you value the long term, is everything focused upon the short term? As the old saying goes, short term will always push out long term. Hard data will always push out soft data. If you say you value all stakeholders, you only talk about owners and customers and neglect your people, your suppliers, and perhaps the community? At bottom, the underlying paradigm of the old system treated people like things, maybe with kindness, but nevertheless, it was a way of better managing people. I suggest the new paradigm, you don't manage people at all. Management pertains to things. You manage money. You manage inventory. People is the area of leadership. You want to get into a release philosophy with people, in a control philosophy with things. Can you see the different paradigms? Yet Abraham Maslow once said, "He that is good with a hammer tends to think everything is a nail." Many people who are good in managing things also attempt to manage people the same way. What they need is a capacity to go into a leadership paradigm as well as a management paradigm with regard to things.
Life is a mission, not a career. And I wish you all the best in your missions. Thank you.
This concludes the Principle-Centered Leadership Audio Learning Program. We hope your experience with this material has been beneficial as you continually strive to increase your leadership effectiveness. For information on additional products and services from the Covey Leadership Center, please call 1-800-255-0777.